Mistresses. Sex and Scandal at the Court of Charles II by Linda Porter. Read by Julie Teal. Author's note. It was only when I began work on this book that I fully appreciated how extraordinarily complicated were the politics of the reign of Charles II. This might seem of secondary importance in a work about his mistresses, but the controversy which surrounded his lifestyle seeped into the heart of British life for the 25 years of his reign. Indeed, it had already begun to colour national and international reaction to him during the miserable years of his exile, during the latter years of the civil wars, and throughout the period of the English Republic that followed the execution of his father, Charles I. And indeed, it matters far more that his mistresses were perceived as having influence at the time than whether they really did or not in hindsight. His tendency to shower money on them when he was frequently at loggerheads with Parliament over financial support and taxation made him reliant on other sources of income, notably from Louis XIV, the cousin who largely despised him. Though the king cheerfully took the money and fulfilled none of the promises he'd secretly made in securing it, making him, at least on paper, a traitor to the country he ruled, this is scarcely an exoneration. The mistresses themselves are a fascinating and flawed group of women. Only the actress Nell Gwynne is generally remembered today, but her predecessor, Barbara Palmer, Countess of Castlemaine, and Nell's rival, Louise de Kerouac, Duchess of Portsmouth, between them dominated the king in ways that Nell never could, the one through passion and the other through simpering guile. Frances Teresa Stuart, who arrived at the Restoration Court from France in her mid-teens, hid a ruthless instinct for survival beneath a naive exterior and managed to stay out of the king's bed while having to submit to frequent public gropings that must have been excruciating. Hortense Mancini, Duchess Mazarin, had led such a colourful life before taking refuge in England that some of the other ladies seem almost tame in comparison. While the king's mistresses aimed at celebrity and wealth, only his rejected wife, Catherine of Braganza, seems ever to have truly loved him. I've tried to give a more positive picture of this Portuguese princess than is often the case. Recent research on her cultural interests and approach to queenship has revealed that there was much more to Catherine than the weepy, despairing foreigner retreating into religion than is often supposed. Nor should we underestimate one of her less obvious achievements, that of making the drinking of tea for pleasure, as opposed to a strange medicinal brew so fashionable. Charles II ruled a deeply divided country, where religious persecution, whether of Catholics or Protestant non-conformists, was rife. His reign saw the beginnings of the two-party system, which still, for good or ill, underpins British politics to this day. He cared nothing for Scotland or Ireland, and was happy to trade on a false reputation for bonhomie, of being the sort of man that other men like because of his penchant for women and his apparent approachability, which was, in reality, a sham. The fact that he is still viewed as the merry monarch and has been treated with indulgence by history, though not necessarily by historians, is something I find bewildering. Yet the contradictions remain. His private life makes Henry VIII look puritanical. But Charles II, despite the many and varied mistresses, could not be induced to divorce his wife, let alone execute her. His reign saw humiliation heaped on Britain from abroad, and catastrophe overtake his capital in the mid-1660s, yet he somehow managed to survive and to dispense with Parliament in the closing years of his reign. The lasting impression of Charles II, when all the sordid glamour of his court and his mistresses is stripped away, is of a lazy, intelligent man, forever marked by the hardship of his formative years, a pleasure-loving cynic not quite redeemed by his deathbed conversion to Catholicism. I should like to thank James Palmer at Dorney Court for letting me consult his archives on a very wet July day in 2017, and His Grace the Duke of Richmond and Gordon for permission to use the Goodwood manuscript at the West Sussex Record Office. Dr. Sean Cunningham and Elizabeth Nowitzki at the National Archives gave advice